Okay, good afternoon and welcome back. We're going to continue our discussion of Azure Storage. We talked a lot about blobs. What I'm going to be doing this next hour is I'm going to be talking about queues, I'm going to be talking about tables, and then I'm going to be showing some demonstration code of blobs and queues and tables too. All right? So, let's talk now about queues. You know what a queue is, don't you? A queue is a classic first-in, first-out storage structure. And you can create as many queues as you find useful and cost-effective here in your storage account. So you've got an account, and you've got as many queues as you want. And you put messages into the queues, and you take messages out of the queues and process them. You know, queuing is not a new thing, okay? If anybody has ever worked with MSMQ, for example, you know, you've seen these before. And What's good about this is they allow you to decouple the workflow and allow you to have the web roles. The users will enter data in forms. The web roles will take that data, put them in the queue, and here you can have as many worker roles as you care to, dequeuing the requests, thinking about them, and then sending the responses back to the original client. And It's a good, handy way of distributing workflow. You can spin up as many worker roles as you want in order to keep the number of messages in the queue as small as you would like it to be. You can have different queues for different options. You can have more worker roles on queue A than you have on queue B. Queue A is the first class or business class section, and queue B is for coach or whatever. There are any number of ways of hooking this up, and it's very flexible. It's not a new pattern, but we've got it in the cloud now, which is nice. There's only 8K per message data, which sounds like a small amount, but what you usually do if you have a lot of data, more than about 8K, is you will take that data and you will put it in a blob. And you will pass the name of the blob to the worker role, and the worker role will say, aha, here's the blob that I'm supposed to be working on, and go fetch that blob. So you'll pass them by reference in that sense rather than by value. Queue operation, create the queue, delete the queue, put metadata on the queue if you want, the name, the kind of thing that you're using it for, put a message in, get a message out, peek a message, look there, but don't take it out, delete a message from the queue. There's one major difference in the queues as they're implemented here in Azure from the queues that you might be used to seeing elsewhere. Like in MSMQ, you could make your queue transacted or not transacted. And transacted meant that the thing would happen exactly once. Non-transacted meant that they would use best efforts, but there weren't any guarantees. If you look at what we have in Azure for reliable queue delivery, they like to use the term guaranteed delivery and processing of messages. Well, you know, I mean, one little supernova of the sun and the messages don't get delivered. And so guaranteed is a relative term. But here's how it works. Messages in the queue. A worker role or whoever goes to fetch the message from the queue and calls read message, takes the message from the queue. The message is not actually removed from the queue. The message is marked as having been taken. The message is then stays in the queue but is invisible. The next worker role to come and fetch a message from the queue won't get that first one. Role 1 takes message A. Message A becomes invisible. Role number 2 now comes along and goes to the queue and says, hey, take a message out. It gets message B. Even though message A is still there, it's invisible, so role 2 doesn't see message A. Role 2 sees message B. All right. When the role that fetched message A finishes, it will call the delete method and say, hey, actually take message A out of the queue and shred it. I'm finished with it. If the worker role crashes, well, then it will not come back. And when a certain amount of time has passed, message A will become visible again. So this is at least once delivery. It's not exactly once delivery, but it's at least once delivery. And that's how these are set up.
So right. They can be poison messages.
There could be poison messages, I guess, now that you mention it. And I imagine that you would have to do your own processing of poison messages and say, well, golly gee whiz, I DQ'd this one 27 times and it's not going away.
And for that, I have the DQ count. Looking at the message, I can see how many times it was DQ'd. And if it was DQ'd too many times, let's say 5 times, I can understand or assume that this message is a poison message which will cause me to fail or cause me to crash. And I don't want to crash. So when I see such a message, I say, hey, oh, this is suspicious. I would take that message and I will queue it to another queue. And nobody will take the messages out of that queue. It's just for management.
A dead letter queue.
It's a dead letter queue, exactly.
And sometimes the developers will look at that and see what kind of messages am I getting and am I choking on.
Exactly.
Things like this. But the thing is, you have to write that yourself. That's not part of...
I can see the DQ count. I have to write that processing myself, of course. And this means that the order is not guaranteed.
The order is not guaranteed. Well, order is kind of never guaranteed once you go into a queue anyway. I mean, it's very hard to make order guaranteed once you go into a queue. You need to give up on a number of other characteristics. The whole point of queues is decoupling. You don't have to have both the client end and the server end working at the same time. And if you're wondering whether that is or is not all that useful a design pattern, well, ask yourself this. When was the last time you called somebody on the telephone and actually found them there answering their own phone? It's been a while, actually. And so they're usually not there or not answering, so what do? You leave a message. And then they get the message and they call you back and you're not there, you're busy, you're in a talk like this, you've got your phone turned off, and you're not there, they leave a message and you get their message and call them back. How often do you actually talk to somebody face-to-face, back and forth at the same time? And the answer is almost never. Most of your work is done by queues. And you're never quite sure which message has gotten through.
So order is not guaranteed.
Order is not guaranteed.
And the fact that the message is processed more than once is also something that I have to take into consideration.
It absolutely is. You want to think about making your messages idempotent.
Exactly.
As opposed to idempotent. Operation is one that produces the same result no matter how many times you run it. A classic example of adding $100, suppose your account balances $500, adding $100 is not an idempotent operation because if you do it once, you have $600, you do it twice, you have $700, etc. But setting the value of your account to $600 is an idempotent operation because no matter how many times you set the value to $600, $600 is the value that you're going to have.
You know, queues can help me also to manage the amount of instances that I need in my compute power, or how many instances do I have for my service. If messages... are accumulated in the queue, and I see more and more and more messages in the queue, I can understand that maybe, well, there's not enough computing power.
It's like when you're in the drugstore checkout line, and the lines get longer. When they see 3 or 4 people waiting, the cashiers are supposed to call for another cashier to come help them. But that's in the elasticity talk that I'll be giving tomorrow, so we'll go into that in more detail then. All right. Okay, so those are queues, and you've seen them before. They're not new. They behave more or less the same way that they've always behaved. They're here in Azure. You can get your hands on them. They're useful here, though, because they're really good things for scaling, and scaling right here is what we're trying to do. So one could argue that queues have now come into their own. And the final piece of storage abstraction that I want to talk about is the table. And a table here, you've seen them. There's the account. There's a table, and now you've got these entities. And there's even if you look in the documentation, they will even tell you that an entity is like a column in a classic table, and an entry is a row in a classic table. You are not restricted to these structures. These entities can really be anything at all. You don't have to have the same thing in the same row. You don't have to have the rows match. You don't have all the columns lined up. You don't have the rigorous enforcement of rules that one finds in a relational database. At the same time, there is a certain freedom of my chains here, and you usually find yourself, you ever see that demotivators poster? It's a spoof on all those motivational posters that you put up. It's at despair.com. I should have made a picture of it because I thought of it's got a herd of zebras, and it says conformity. It says when people are free to do what they want, they usually imitate each other. And so, yes, you can bend yourself into a five-dimensional hyperpretzel, mixing and matching things in tables. In practice, what you're probably going to have is most tables, most of the entries in a table are going to be pretty much the same thing. They're going to be pretty much the same set of columns, even though they don't have to be. Some of the columns are going to be optional and so on. But don't let all this talk of flexibility that you can do anything in the universe let you think that you ought to do anything in the universe. In practice, you will probably find your life a whole lot easier if tables are still more or less mostly kind of tables, especially when you get into the implementation of them, I think.
Well, I did find a few scenarios where I used the multi-schema capability of tables, mm-hmm. where I put two different types of entities in the same table. For example, let's say I have customers and orders, and I want to put them in the same transaction. So I want to put them in the same partition. Partition is a boundary of is a transaction boundary. Okay. So I want to have them in the same transaction.
I'm going to show the partition when we get to the code sample.
Of course.
The discussion of the partition.
This was just an example where I used multi-schemas in the mm-hmm. same table just to have them in the same transaction and to have a locality, to have them close to each other.
Okay, fair point. Still, I'm calling that one an edge case myself. All right. What about tables? You can create them, you can query them, you can delete them, you can insert and update entities, and delete, you can query. I mean, it's about what you're looking for about a table. It's just the main thing is that they don't, table A doesn't affect any other tables. You can't do a join table A on pivots such and such where, whatever the hell. If you need to do those things, then SQL Azure is what you need, and we'll be talking about that within the next hour. And the entities that you put in there, each row can have up to that many properties of up to 1 megabyte each. Each one of them has to have a partition key and a row key. A row key is it's like a unique ID within that row. GUIDs are often nice for row keys. We'll talk about them. The partition key is where it lives. Azure takes this partition key. And if the partition keys are the same, they're kept in the same load balancing group. And crossing partition boundaries is expensive. And so the data that is going to be queried together, you probably want to keep in the same partition. And we'll see more of that when we look at the sample here. And the other properties don't have any kind of fixed schema, and you can put anything anywhere if you want. Although in practice, I'm pretty sure, I have not mixed and matched them. I have not run into the need, although Manu has. The schemas are not fixed. What you can have is here, there, like the birth date here. You can see it's in a different format. The table does not enforce that. If you need that sort of enforcement, then SQL Azure is where you need to go. That means that you need to check all of your data input before you go put it into the table because the table won't do it for you. There's a really classic, I wish somebody out there could find this for me. I will be happy to send you an autographed copy of one of my books if you can find this. There is an absolutely superb classic episode of the Roadrunner cartoon where Wile E. Coyote takes out an Acme guided missile and the dial for the prey that it attacks is set to rabbit, is set to turtle, and then the third notch, he sets it to Roadrunner. Throws the switch, and the guided missile goes off chasing after the Roadrunner. Guided missile gets just about up to the Roadrunner. The Roadrunner pulls out a pencil out of the air, you know how he does, and writes Coyote on it, turns the notch to knob to Coyote. The missile immediately turns around, goes back, blows up Wile E. Coyote, he falls off a cliff, a rock falls on him, the usual thing. And the lesson here is that if you don't scan your data for unwanted inputs, the world might blow up in your face. I have not been able to find... I remember that cartoon from where I was a kid. I have not been able to find it. I have bought every Roadrunner compilation I've ever found. If somebody can find that and show me where it is, I will be happy to send you a copy of my book, because it is the best demonstration of the need for sanitizing inputs here. And that's what you're going to have to do here, because the table won't do it for you. All right? So, like so, when you do a query here, the kind of query, go look with a where the last name equals acres. That'll give you this one, like so.
Again, this is...
Would you like to discuss the partition key? I know you're just there vibrating, wanting to talk about partition key, so please.
By the way, the query we've just seen is an ODATA query.
I suppose it is, yes.
Again, that means that I can query the data using OData, using any technology that can do HTTP can query my data. The data is in Azure storage. It is independent, so it is open for anyone with access control, of course, that can query that. And we know the technology from WCF, WCF Data Services. So I can use WCF Data Services to query my data here, which is a beautiful thing. Now, about partitioning and partition key. A partition key is very important, and we need to understand the meaning of a partition key. Anything within the same partition will live in the same server. So it doesn't mean that when a particular partition lives only by itself on the same server. There can be many partitions which will live in the same server, and that is a partition range. But a single partition will always be on the same server. You will not have two different entities from the same partition in two different servers.
So you have row number one and row number two, if they have the same partition key, they will always be on the same machine.
They will always be on the same machine. And I will use that when I query my data. I want to query against a single server, because as I do that, my query will be the fastest. I do not want to query against a large number of servers, because then Azure Storage will have to go to each one, each particular server, and execute that query and do a map reduce pattern, get all the information, and bring that to me.
Crossing machine boundaries is still kind of expensive.
Of course, it is expensive. So I do want to query against a single machine. I want to have a transactional data manipulation, and a transaction boundary is a partition. So if I want to do my transactional data operation, I need to have a single partition. I need to work against a single partition. This is why I want to partition my data wisely. Now, if I partition wisely, I know how my partitions are spread out. And I'm sure that I will use several servers, and I will scale out as promised. But if I will always create a new partition, let's say I would use my partition key as a date time or something like that. So if the partition key is a date time, I will always have a new partition. Let's say I would have a log, okay? So I will insert log entries into into a table. So the partition key is date and time, so it always have a new partition key. This means that I will add a new partition, and with that, I will always go to the same server, the last server. I will always use just one server.
So you will have all of your entities all spread out all over the universe.
That's true.
And you'll never find them again.
That's true, but I will always go to the last server. I will not use those backing servers that I wrote earlier. And that will prevent me from being scaled.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Thank you. Okay. And so now we're going to go on to a code sample just to summarize here. These are the abstractions, blob drives, tables, and queues. They're easy to use via the storage client library. If you look in the hands-on labs, specifically here, there. All right, here is the Windows Azure Training Kit, which you've downloaded. I really wish they would assign this thing with a key so I don't have to undo the security every time. This causes disrespect for all security. It causes you to just cruise through any of these things on autopilot. I have a hard time saying that anybody that does this can say that they're serious about security here. Yes, I will let it run. Sign it next time, please. Thank you. The place where you will find these mostly, applications for these, is here in the demos. If you look, there's Windows Azure, there's a Windows Azure using Blobs demo, using Queues demo here, and using Tables demo there. Also, the code that I'm about to demonstrate is going to be in the Born to Learn download, which we've given you earlier. The samples that I've got here were adapted from an earlier version of the training kit, and I used them in the Microsoft Academic Alliance pieces that I wrote for university professors. And and they are tied. The demos that you see here are tied to version 1.2 of the SDK. And if you try to run them on 1.3, you're going to get some errors. And there is a blog post by Steve Marks that you can go search for that'll explain what the problem is and how to solve it. The downloads on Born to Learn, I've already fixed. They will work straight out of the box with version 1.3. Right? But if you go and try and use these, you're going to run into that problem and of a version skew, and you'll have to go look for that blog post that Steve Marks did. Okay, so I am going to go here. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to show you blobs, I'm going to show you queues, and the last thing I'm going to do is show you tables. Right? Here, Azure, there's the storage piece that I'm doing here. This one is the, I call it the Lesson 2 and 3 thumbnail demo. It's a thumbnail sketch like this. Open it up. If I look in my Server Explorer here, there, when you install the Visual Studio 2010 tools for Azure, what you find, here's my Server Explorer. There's my Windows Azure Storage Explorer. Here's my development. It'll show me my development storage account here. If you go look in under blobs, that's where the blobs are, there. And this is a blob container called Photo Gallery. And if you look in this, here, there, these are photos that I already have in the gallery. This, that's the actual photo. There it is. You buy a used car from that guy? Not me. Hell no. Get out of here. And this is a thumbnail sketch of that. It's the same thing, only much smaller. Right? So you can see I already have some blobs in my container. I'm going to go run this here. And it takes a macroscopic amount of time to start up here, like so. And what it lets me do here is I can browse for photos. Here's my picture directory. I can pick a photo, and Mano, you bored the hell out of me with pictures of your family, so I'm going to return the favor. These are my kids. And that is my younger daughter, Lucy, who's almost 8. That is her 7th birthday cake that she's very happy about, and in just 5 seconds, she's going to show up here. Oh, do I have to click the submit button? I guess I do. Right. There she is, like that. And here's my other one. This is Annabelle, who is almost, who is 10 and changed now, like so. And there she is with her favorite stuffed animal, snow leopard. Now, how the heck did they get here is the question I see you asking. Let's go look at the code. Here, I've got this project, and the project is called Thumbnails. If you look in roles, I've got two roles here. I've got a web role and a worker role. Let's look at the web role first. Okay, the web role takes the picture, uploads it into a blob. The worker role takes the picture in the blob and makes a thumbnail out of it. All right? We're going to look at the web role first so we can look at blobs first. All right? Here is my, let me close up the worker role. Here's my web role. Here's my default.aspects. If we go look at this, what you find there, it's a pretty simple page. All it has on it here is it has this. It has a script manager. It has a label. It has a text box for the name of the picture. There's the browse button to bring up the dialog box. There's the submit button. There's a timer causing the update. And here, that is a list view, and that's the control that actually displays the photos. right?
So that's an Ajax project, like AjaxASP.net project.
AjaxASP.net project, that's absolutely right. That's all it is.
Which means that any web project, Ajax, MVC, anything, just a web project, can be migrated to the cloud.
Pretty much. Anything, yeah, any of these kinds of web projects can be migrated to the cloud. It is very much like when we got web forms back in 2002 and 2003. All of a sudden, anybody that knew how to do a VB6 desktop project could sort of, kind of, use those same skills to sort of, kind of, do a web project. And it wouldn't be the very best web project, but dang, it'd be on the web, it would be working, and it would be done very quickly. And it was the same integration with the tools. It takes the skills you already know and points them at this new arena, and they more or less mostly kind of work in the new arena, and it's actually quite smooth. Now, the problem is that that you don't know what you don't know when you get there, and there are things in the new arena then and now that will sort of bite you because you're not really thinking about them. But you can very easily get from what you already know to tottering to your feet and saying, hello, world, and actually displaying these pictures in this new environment with an astonishing amount of ease compared to the lower levels of abstractions. I mean, if you ever use the Amazon, you just got to build the thing for the virtual machine up. It's quite a pain. But here, you know, you click, 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 and here's some wizards, and zing, there you've got the skeleton anyway of a project. All right, let's go look at default.aspects. When the user clicks the submit button here, here's the code. And there's the submit button, all right? Okay, if the user has actually selected a file, fine. We need to get the file, the extension, get the extension of the file name because we're going to use that for the data type, the label that we're going to put on the blob. Right, so we got to get the extension off the file name. So there we are peeling off the extension. Got to make a name for our blob. And the names of the blobs need to be unique within the container. And the names of the containers need to be unique within the account. Okay, if you've got blob number 1 in container A, and you have a container B, you can have blob number 1 in container B as well. If you have container A and B in account George, and container A and B in account Susie, that works well too. But what you can't do is you can't have blob number 1 and another blob number 1 in the same container A. So we need to make our blob names unique within the container. The guy that wrote the sample went overkill, went overboard just a teeny bit, I think. Here he is making the name for the blob, and he takes he makes a brand new GUID, so right there is the name is unique. And guess what? He also took the number of ticks that Windows has been running for, and he whammed that together with the blob name. There he concatenates that onto the extension, onto the end, that they're the JPEG or whatever it is. So he's got a brand new name. That's going to be the name of the blob. And so if we go look here in my Server Explorer here, we'll come back to that in a second. There we go. My Server Explorer, if we go look in my photo gallery there, you see, look at the names here. You know, 16, that's a kind of tick name. And now here, if you look at there, that's a GUID. So you can see that's where that funny kind of name comes from. He's concatenating a brand new GUID along with a number of ticks to make sure that this name is unique within the blob container. Okay, go back to the default aspects code here. So now I've got a name for my blob. Right. Now I need to make a blob for that. And so I've got this code here. Here, get the blob, get the photo gallery container, and get a blob in it, the blob whose name is this. All right. Now, let me go look at this get photo gallery container. This is a utility function. This is a utility function that uses the class library, the Windows Azure class library, to the strongly typed functions, the ones that I myself like, in order to access the storage, rather than you could easily do this with RESTful services, although to my way of thinking, not as easily. All right, this is my own private utility function. going to right-click here and say go to the definition. It's going to pop me up a little higher in the same file. There it is, you see. Here's the Get Photo Gallery container. There. It's going to return a Cloud Blob container. Got this method here, create once container in queue. What that's going to do is that's going to go look for the container. It's going to create it if necessary and open it if it already exists and give me back the handle to this container. Okay, we're not talking about the queue just yet. We will in a little while. Right now we're just talking about this container here. All right. So again, that's another utility function. You can see it's right up here, right next to it. So let's go look at that one here. There. We've got this private member variable here, this cloud blob client. That's where we store our reference to the blob. All right, create once container and queue. Here, we go into a synchronization lock, so we won't be doing this multiple times through multiple threads. You know, here, if we already have one, just return it and use what's there. All right. But the first time we come in here, if we haven't opened it yet, here, there, here, got this message, this method, cloud storage account from configuration setting, data connection string, that looks in the config file. Looks at the config file here, the web.config there, and it looks for the setting data connection here, there, and there's a lot of gunk left over here. So if we just go search for...
find web.config.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Did I get the wrong
web? Yeah, you got web.config. It's service configuration
file. Service configuration file. Of course. Yes, thank you. That's
that's it.
That's...
in the solution file.
Right.
Go.
I can't always get lost in those suckers. There we go. Okay, here we go. Looks for the data connection string.
Here it is.
And yes, it says here, use development storage. Right. So here, that's where we find it. That's where we find it. And it's going to come back. There's the connection to the cloud storage account. In this case, it's to the local storage. If we were going to point to the place in the cloud, we would change those entries in the config file. All right. So now I have my cloud storage account here. And I'm going to say here, go create me a blob client. All right. And that's going to create me the client, the logical client object. It's on my client side. It's not actually connected to any storage yet. It's just my logical client-side object. The name, to my way of thinking, does not express that quite as much as it could. Then here, okay, Mr. Blob Client, get container reference. So go find me the blob container. Whose name is this?
Now, Photo Gallery, as I can see, is in the lowercase.
Photo Gallery is in the lowercase. Does it need to be in lowercase?
It must be a lowercase.
You know, why must it be in lowercase? I mean, I thought we were finished with that, you know, 35 years ago.
Well, that's the world of HTTP.
The world of HTTP.
And remember, we are on the web, so you have to remember to keep lower cases.
It is like Tevye says in Fiddler on the Roof, right? There's a tradition here in Anatevka that all our men wear a little prayer shawl. You ask me why? I'll tell you why. I don't know, but it's a tradition.
So remember just to put lower cases in your references. That's it.
Good point. Okay, thank you for pointing it here. Then container here, create if not exist. Okay, so go find this thing, create it if it doesn't already exist. Now I have my blob container here. All right. And here I am setting permissions on the blob container to allow anonymous access. And we talked about that a little earlier today. We'll talk some more about that tomorrow. That means that if somebody was reaching in with a standalone program, they would be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you might want that. Other times you might not want that.
Well, you did that with your own browser.
So we did. All right. And that, and now we have our reference to the blob container. All right. So unwinding the stack here. We're going to come back and talk about queues, but unwinding the stack here. There. The create once retainer and queue returns. And so... blob client, get the reference to the container that's photo gallery. We now know that the thing exists. And so back will come the reference to the blob container. All right? So this function now returns We come back here. Now we have a blob container. Okay, now we have a reference to our photo gallery, blob container. Get block blob reference to that name. And here, this is a method on the, this is a static method on the Cloud Blob Container object. And it says here, make me a brand new blob. Here. Okay. Make me a brand new blob. And there I have one. Hey, Mr. Container, make me a new blob whose name is this. And back it comes. There. On the blob, we go to the properties, that's the metadata, go to the content type, and I've got this utility function that goes and figures out the MIME type for that name, for JPEG. Right? So I put that, I write that on the label on the bucket, says, yes, this thing contains a JPEG. And now here, blob, upload from stream, there's the file content, that's the file that the user picked, just upload the blob from stream. And you see, you remember when I was saying that, you know, I think of blobs and streaming kinds of things? This is kind of why. Take this blob and, no, don't do that with it. Take this blob and just suck in this entire file and stick it in the blob. And now we have a blob, and now the blob is full of data, and that's how we got these things, right? All right. Okay. All right, so that's how blobs work. Now, what about queues? Where do we do queues here? Let's go back in and look at this thing and think in terms of queues. Well, there's my default aspects here. All right. We create the blob that is the picture. But we also want to create a thumbnail, so we don't have to download the whole picture when we want to display it. The things that you're looking at here in this browser right here, these are thumbnails. They're much smaller than the actual picture. Right? How do we get these? Well, let's go look at the code. As always, user clicks the submit button. There we are making the blob. Fine, fabulous, there's the blob. All right. Now, what we want to do is we want to go to a message queue and tell the worker role that a new photo blob exists. And it is the worker role's job to go look at the new photo blob and make a thumbnail of it. All right? So here, get thumbnail maker queue. That is my own utility function. Let's say it does more or less the same thing as this get blob, if I give this get photo gallery container utility function did. Right-click, go to the definition of it. There, we're up closer to the top of the same file. It's right next to get photo gallery container because it is the same darn thing. Create once container and queue. Then, if we go to this, it's up here. There we made the blob container. You saw that. Set the permissions on the blob container. Now, here, same thing. Go to the storage account and create a cloud queue client, that is to say the object on the client side that refers to a queue on my Azure storage. So there's my queue storage. And here, queue storage, get queue reference thumbnail maker, and as I'm sure Mono would point out that yes, this is in lowercase as well. All right. So now I actually have the client-side queue object that is connected to an actual queue in my storage.
I can see quite a similarity in the API. You get a client. Mm-hmm. You create a client, a queue client, a blob client, mm-hmm. and then you ask the client to create the actual thing for you, get a reference for the queue, get a reference for the blob, etc., and then you just with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, this is why I myself prefer the objects.
It's a simple API.
Mm-hmm. It is a simple API. I like simple APIs.
It's nice.
I like simple and dumb APIs.
What's beautiful to see that working with the Azure Storage is simple.
It is.
It's a new technology, but it's not frightening. It is simple.
It has been made relatively simple, especially if you already know these existing techniques, which is the point we're trying to make in these whole 3 days of teaching.
Simplicity is very important.
Absolutely.
And you can see from our experience, from your experience as well, the people who are watching us, there are so many APIs, and those APIs are not simple. And there was a lot of work which was done here to make the API as simple as it's as possible, as simple as it gets. And I think there was a beautiful job here because it is really, really simple.
I would have to agree, especially if all the work that I did. I mean, I wrote a book on the composite UI application block. That was not simple, okay?
Yeah. It
would have been simple. One complicated story. This is simple, and that's good. All right, so queue.create, if not like this, now we have the connection to the queue. And so back will return. Okay, so the get thumbnail maker queue will be it. So now I have my queue. I'll say here, add message. Add a message to this queue. What kind of message? Well, a new object of class cloud queue message. And in this case, the content of the message is solely the name of the blob. The fact that it appears in this queue means that, oh yes, this is a new blob that that I need to make a thumbnail of. That's how this simple application is constructed. So the only data that I need in this message is the name. So here, make a new cloud queue message with UTF-8 encoding on that name. They still haven't abstracted away the strings. I'm still thinking about 8 versus 16-bit characters. I can't say I'm happy to see that again, but that's life. All right. So in the queue, go add a message. And that's how you create a queue, and you want to put a message in the queue. That's how you put a message in the queue. Stop me if I get too technical here. All right. Okay. So now I've got my queue to the worker role, and the worker role is going to be looking at this. Here's my worker role. Let's go look at it. There. Again, pretty darn simple. There's the worker role.cs. It's got an it's got this message on start, which is where it does it basically fiddles with configuration. That's not really interesting. The piece that we find interesting is this run method. And it's reminds me of the run method of any program, really. Here it is opening the blob container and the queue, doing it once. This is exactly the same code as we had in the web role for opening the blob container and opening the queue. I know it's exactly the same code because I physically cut and pasted it. It is bit for bit identical. Editor inheritance, we call that. All right. So we get our storage structures initialized as we did before. All right. Now we go into this loop infinitely. And what we do is we check the queue for a message. Okay. Hey, Mr. Queue, is there a message? All right. Is there a message? If message not equals null, if there is a message, we will come down here and we'll process the message. We'll do things with it. All right. Otherwise, we'll go to sleep for 5 seconds, and then we'll wake up in 5 seconds and look and see if there's a message. There are ways of hooking up to receive asynchronous notifications when a message comes in the queue. The author of this program decided he would just pull. Fine, no problem. So you can see I'm in an infinite loop. If there is a message, that means that somebody has sent me the name of a blob and needs me to take that blob and make a thumbnail out of it. All right? Here's my thumbnail name. What I do is, okay, right here, I go to the message. There's the message that I took out of the queue there. My queue.get message takes the message out of the queue. I get a copy of this message. The message in the queue is marked as invisible. So it's still kind of there. If I don't get back in a few seconds and say, yeah, I got it, I took care of it, it'll pop back. But right now it's marked invisible. So if I have a message, message as string, that takes the message and converts it into just plain string. All right. So the thumbnail name here, all right, that's the message, that's the name of the blob that I want. And I attack and put JPEG on the end. So that's the name of the thumbnail that I'm going to make. All right. Get block reference to path. All right. So there, that's the, now I've opened the blob. I was passed the name in the message. Now I've opened the blob here. Now I'm making another blob. That's going to be my thumbnail. Making another blob. And saying this is thumbnails slash They're the name of the blob. If you go look here in my Blob Explorer, you see how that is 1634280, etc. You see how that one is thumbnail slash 1634280, etc. Okay, that's how that name came about right here. This line of code there. Right. Set the content type on it. And now here, make a new memory stream. Put the image in it. Seek it to the beginning. And this create, this thumbnail blob upload from stream takes that stream and puts it into the blob. So again, looks like a stream, feels like a stream. I find it easy to think of them as streams. So this method here, create thumbnail, that looks, that's the one that looks at the big picture and gets, gives you back a little thumbnail. That's a local utility function. That's our business logic here, if you will. That's what that one is doing. And now here, q.delete message. That says to the q, yes, I got the message, I processed the message, I'm happy with the message is good, the message is cool, you know, take this message, I'm good. And that's how we get that. So that's how the q, that's how the thumbnail gets created.
So what we can see here, that you took the actual processing of data, actual workload, actual processing, yes, and you put it in a worker role.
I did. That's exactly
and
what I did.
And the user interface, the web user interface, please upload a blob, see a blob, whatever, see the data as it is. This was done in a web role.
It was done in a web role.
And what you also did is you did communicate, created a communication channel between those two roles using queues.
That's exactly right.
And what
right.
was done here was the implementation of an asynchronous pattern, asynchronous workload.
Very true.
We learned in classes a few years ago that if we want to gain scalability in distributed systems, we want to use asynchronous workloads. And here you've done it so in a, such a simple way.
It's pretty darn simple when you start looking at it. I mean, I am impressed by how simple it is, how simple things are simple.
So right? Implementation of well-known design patterns are so simple with Windows Azure Storage.
So far, I've been pretty happy. All right, and so now just to close the loop, okay, how does the browser display these? I'm going to go back to the web role, okay, the web role here, there. I'm going to go to default.aspects. What I have in default aspects is I have a timer, all right? And the timer refreshes at every 5 seconds, if memory serves. And here in the page pre-render, what it's going to do is it goes to, there's only one line of code here, so you've got to watch carefully or you'll miss it. It says from object O in get photo gallery container, get directory reference thumbnail. So what that means is go to the photo gallery container. Get directory reference means go look here and go find every blob that has thumbnails slash in front of it. And that's what you were talking about, implementing something that looks and feels like a directory.
It's a very nice abstraction.
It's a very nice abstraction. It's not a real directory folder. It's just a pattern match, but that's okay. It looks like it. It feels like it.
This is another thing that shows simplicity.
It shows
people love directories because it makes order.
I agree.
And we have a lot of data. We need order.
Yep.
And we have that abstraction, even though it's another technology whatsoever.
Indeed. So anyway, so go find all of the blobs that start with thumbnails slash. That slash is the default delimiter character. You can change that if you want to. I've never seen anybody ever actually do it. Okay, and list blobs. So it's going to give me a list of all the blobs whose name begins with thumbnail slash. And so back is going to come a list of blobs, and it's going to get put into this thumbnail display control. That's the list view control, the regular ASP.NET web forms list view. That's going to be the data source. It's going to say, hey, get me this list of blobs and put it in my thumbnail display control as a data source. And then here, thumbnail display control data bind to that data source, zing, and up comes all three of these blobs. And that's how it goes and fetches with the contents in the blobs and displays it. It's quite, the one thing I'll point out is here, it's the actual URL. It gets a list of URLs. So it actually is fetching these the blobs in a RESTful manner. Everything else I did through the client library here, this fetching, this data binding is done through the REST. And so that's how I get these. And let me do just one more, if you will humor me. The April 1st specifically edition of my MSDN column is entitled The Cat Butt Factor, and it's going to be written in the first person by my cat. And there you see her with her paw on the keyboard. I said, look, Sima, you can either write this column for me because I'm really busy, or you can go get a job in the exciting field of medical research. Fortunately, she agreed to write the column. So, all right. We ran out of time before we could do the table sample, but it looks very similar. It's got the same abstraction API, the same simplicity. It's commented to heck and back again. That's kind of what I did with it when I made it for the Academic Alliance. So I will allow you to go through that at your leisure, and you can send me email if you'd care to discuss it further. So now we're going to go take a 10-minute break, and we are going to come back, and then it's going to be Manu's turn to talk about SQL Azure. Okay.